Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Cristina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Cristina. I'm looking at my two wonderful co-hosts, Mr. Richard Polinelli. Welcome back, my brother.
Thank you. But I go away for 2 weeks and you change the opening music on me.
Well, I'll tell you about that in just a minute. And hi, Bobby G. Bell.
I'm here.
You are. is another gift from Mr. Rick Gilman. It's called Council Hill. It's a very long piece. It's about 5 minutes long. And he does it with a world-renowned cello player. So it's his finger picking and a cello picker. And if you listen to the whole piece, it goes through about 5 or 6 different movements, much like me in the morning. But it's a great piece of music. And Rick, of course, was kind enough to send it along for our use on the Writer's Block. So thank you, Rick. And I know you're listening. So we love you, brother, and take care up there in Wisconsin, because I know it's snowy. And Mr. Henry Park is with us tonight. Of course, he is the opening act on our first Monday of the month, every month, except for we had a 2-week hiatus, and then we had Henry, and now we had another 2 weeks, and we got Henry back. So, Henry, welcome back to the show.
Well, thankful, afraid I might not make it back in time for the show. I was working this afternoon with Tim Matheson, who is doing audio commentary on some Bonanza episodes.
Well,
in addition to starring in the Western series The Quest with Kurt Russell, he was a regular on the last season of Bonanza.
Yep.
And does anyone know what other Western series he starred in the last season of?
I know, but I can't think of it.
The Virginian.
The Virginian.
He shut down.
Of course.
That's right. He shut down both of those shows.
Was it Shiloh or the Virginian?
Well, actually, yeah, he was not in the Men from Shiloh, the final version where everyone had bigger sideburns and bigger guns.
And bigger hats.
Yes, that too. And,
so we don't want to see
Ennio Morricone theme.
We don't want to see Tim on 1883 anytime soon, right?
Oh, that's true. But actually, when I talked to Taylor Sheridan about 1883, which was just before he started shooting it, I asked him, how many seasons are we likely to see? And he said there will only be one season, that he's thinking about doing more, contained series like that about other generations of that family. But he said there will not be 1883 second season. I have some great news. Back in December of 2018, when I had the pleasure of interviewing Kevin Costner about what was the start of Yellowstone back then, he told me he had an epic Western he'd been trying to get made for years, but it was going to be very expensive, and he hadn't been able to put it together. Well, guess what? For the first time since Open Range in 2003, he's directing and starring in his next Western. It's called Horizon. He's set to roll camera in Utah on August 29th. Mm-hmm. The story covers a 15-year period from before the Civil War, then into the whole Great Movement West. And Costner told Mike Fleming Jr. of Deadline Hollywood, and I quote, "America's expansion into the West was one that was fraught with peril and intrigue. from the natural elements to the interactions with the indigenous people who lived on the land, the determination, at many times ruthlessness, of those who sought to settle it. Horizon tells the story of that journey in an honest and forthcoming way, highlighting the points of view and consequences and character of the characters and life and death decisions, unquote. And they're starting casting this month. So all you actors, get your picks and resumes out.
Okay.
And more good news. Nicolas Cage shot two independent Westerns this past year. They've both been produced by Saban Films. And so we'll actually get to see them. And since it often seems like Westerns don't get enough respect within the industry, I'm happy to note that The Power of the Dog received three Screen Actors Guild Award nominations for lead actor Benedict Cumberbatch and Kirsten Dunst and Cody Smith McPhee in supporting roles. Although I don't know how Kirsten Dunst is not best actress, but, you know.
Yeah. I like the movie, though. It's a good movie.
It is. It's very unusual, very subversive, and I liked it a lot. Oh, and on TV, Yellowstone was nominated for Best Drama Ensemble. And as a matter of fact, Metacritic reported that The Power of the Dog appeared in over 118 film critics' top 10 lists for 2021, the most of any. So, yeah, it is. After two virtual years, the TCM Classic Film Festival is going to be live again and in person, April 21st through the 24th. And while the list of films they're screening is incomplete, it will include George Stevens' Giant and Henry King's The Gunfighter, starring Gregory Peck as Johnny Ringo.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
And you can read all about this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Okay, and mark your calendar, Henry. We'll see you the first Thursday in March.
Outstanding. I'll be there.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take
okay.
care.
Okay. You know, We got a last time this guest was on, we talked about his friend that was homeless in London, and the book itself was poignant and just so well done. And one of the great even going on, if you go on Facebook and look at Mr. Richard Polinelli's posts, there's some great writing there. Just great writing. He uses a lot of symbols for swear words. And he uses a lot of those, and he also uses a lot of args, and follow Richard on Facebook because you're going to get the chuckle of your life.
Especially when I'm caught in a snowstorm in Kansas, you'll get some good stuff.
A little bit of news before we get into our guest tonight. Number one is that Tuscany Bay had two books come out on Tuesday. Root That Mountain Down, which got some great reviews. And we also had Tom's Revenge by a brand new writer, James Edward Webb, that broke on Tuesday. And really good news is that Mr. Declan Finn's book that came out January 8th is the first in a triple series. So we're looking forward to doing Declan's bid. His other book come out February 15th and March 15th. So it's White Ops, if you get a chance. Pick up the White Ops series. It's really, really, really well done. And also some good reviews. Okay. I'm looking at a biography of our guest. Well, Mark Leslie is our guest, and I'm looking at a biography. And for the life of me, I have no other word for it other than very long and unsettling.
I get that description all the time. Are you kidding me?
You know what? I think it's a resemblance to a certain person. But you've got so much going on. You're like we had another Renaissance man last week, Terry Shepard. But I have to call you a Renaissance kind of guy because you do so much. You self-publish. You have another imprint that you have like five or six
prints, but I work with about four different authors that I publish.
Okay, and you're a good writer. This latest book is entitled Fright Nights, Big City. It's the fourth in a series of four about the London werewolf. So without anything further to say, Mr. Warwick Leslie, welcome back to the Writer's Block after a year of hiatus.
Oh, my God, it has been. Yeah, but thanks for having me back. Always fun.
1 year tomorrow. Yeah. So So tell us about Fright Nights Big City.
So it's part of my Canadian Werewolf series, and the title you may gander is sort of familiar, like maybe a movie you might have heard with Michael J. Fox from the 80s. But that's part of the theme, right? So the soul was a Canadian Werewolf in Stowaway. It was more of a play on words, not a particular title. Then Fear and Longing in Los Angeles was the third book, and so. What this is it's urban fantasy, but obviously there's going to be some humor involved. That's what I'm hoping that you get when you see the cover, you hear the title and you see it, you're like, okay, it's going to be action, adventure, urban fantasy. Obviously there's a werewolf in it. And you're going to get there's going to be some funny moments to it.
So, and some blood.
And a bit of blood. Yeah, of course. There always is.
Not a bit, a lot.
It's set in New York City. Primarily, the novels are set in New York City, and so is this one. And in this particular case, it's sort of almost like New York City turns into like The Purge meets. Do you remember? I had to do quite a bit of research into this. Was the I call it the Charles Manson era of New York, a really dangerous place to go. And they had actually distributed these pamphlets, which was basically a fear city is what they called it. And I actually bring that up in the book. And I even had my cover artist incorporate the skull from the pamphlets into the moon on the cover of the book, because it's a subtle reference that it's kind of returning to that state of fear where these bad guys have come into town. They are supernatural. They have supernatural powers. They only kind of appear at night, and they make it dangerous to go anywhere at night in New York. And they are picking on minority groups, and they're neo-Nazis. So there's a lot of this fear happening in the city. The city's kind of shutting down. It almost even goes into a police state where people aren't allowed out at night for their own safety. And my main character, Michael Andrews, who happens to be a good werewolf, working along with a couple other the occult, try to figure out what are they up to turn the whole city into a hatred and fear, and how are they going to stop them?
Okay. I have to say I had a hard time getting into this book.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. Maybe it's because I didn't read the other three.
Right.
And I got lost a lot in it.
Okay.
So you have to go back and reread a lot of it. But I love Michael. I liked. I mean, for a werewolf, he's a pretty good guy.
Yeah, a little hairy, but yeah,
not a little hairy, but, you know. And then
he's a sex machine.
Now, see, Bobby and I were betting if there was going to be a menage a trois.
Oh, you were. Yeah, so there is quite a bit of amorous activity in this novel.
Yeah.
I had a reviewer who really enjoyed it, but he does not like romance, and he didn't like those aspects. He's like, I would have been a 5-star, but you know, it's like too much on the love life thing. There's too much of the bedroom activity. I didn't need that.
Well, Mark, I'll just point out that the room that I'm sitting in tonight is a bedroom in the Algonquin Hotel.
I was
going to
ask you, Bobby. Yeah,
decided to go to New York and, you know, rent a room for the night.
That looks so familiar. I was like, is that the Algonquin behind you? I was going to ask him, like, no, I'm just thinking that. But the very nice touch. Nice touch.
Well, I thought it was interesting that you chose that hotel. I mean, of all of the places you could have set this in New York City. And I wondered, and you also open it on July 4th, 2017. Yep. And I wondered, was there any, you know, why did you choose that date? And why did you choose this particular hotel?
Okay, so 2000, oh God, the setting for a Canadian werewolf 20. Was just a few years earlier. And I had to, so part of the timelines in terms of the 4th is I need to know the cycle of the moon for when Michael's going to turn into a wolf and when he's not. And it happened that he was returning from L.A. on July 4th, because that's when the moon was going to be at more than 80%. So I had to pick those dates on purpose. So July 4th, and yes, it happens to be, but because July 4th is a holiday, that's going to change some of the traffic patterns and stuff like that.
Right.
The Algonquin. One of my first trips to New York, I didn't stay at the Algonquin, but I went there prior to going to the opera, went there for cocktails because it was the literary round circle. and Dorothy Parker and all that history. And I just fell in love with the place. Mm-hmm. And so the next time I went to New York, I made sure I stayed at the Algonquin and researching it. And he's living there as a permanent resident at the Algonquin because he's living the dream of being a writer in New York City. And where else would you live? And so, there's a lot of love for the Algonquin. There's a lot of love for the house cat, not necessarily in this novel, but in the previous novel, Michael actually saves the cat from being kidnapped or catnapped. And because the cat knows he's got animal instincts. And so they have a playful relationship where they tease one another because the cat's like, I know you're not just a regular human. I can smell it off you.
Actually, why don't we just go ahead and break here? We need to take a real short break. Mark, don't go away. You're listening to The Writer's Block. This, of course, is LA Talk Radio. And we'll be right back after this brief word from LA Talk Radio. If you have never listened to LA Talk Radio, then you need to treat yourself to one of the best online live radio stations around. If you can do that better, well then, LA Talk Radio wants you. See, we have 50-minute slots available all day, Saturdays and Sundays included, and we're looking to fill those slots with high-quality broadcasts from talk hosts that are in the know. If you think you have what it takes, go to www.latalkradio.com and click the link that says Become a Host. Then just follow the simple instructions. Before you know it, you'll be joining the legion of radio folks that got their start right here at LA Talk Radio. That's www.latalkradio.com. You have something to say. Now let's hear it. LA Talk Radio. And we are back. It is now 6:16, and we are with our guest, Mr. Mark Leslie from Canada, and we are talking about his newest book, Fright Nights, Big City. And if you want to call and talk, 30815. And as Bobby used to say, grab a pencil. It is 323-203-0815. Okay, back to Fright Nights, Big City. Anybody have a question for Mr. Leslie?
Well, I'm gonna jump in because with the character Lex, who he has returned to New York City with, and I'm gonna avoid spoilers as best as possible. You introduce an element that I found interesting because I hadn't heard it before, where you have someone who has a ability or a power that actually helps. It helps Michael not turn into a werewolf when he should be. So yeah. My question would be, are you going to, since this is urban fantasy, are you going to kind of have him going forward bring in other elements of urban fantasy, whether it be the ghosts or where it might be?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, so one of the things Michael loves about Lex is because when he's with her, she has this nullification power about paranormal and magic, so he can be a normal human. He can't sense certain things about her, read her heartbeat or any of those things. So they're just normal humans together. And that's the first time he's had that. So that's, he falls in love with her for her, not because he can, manipulate her, which is kind of what he can't help but doing. Yeah. But so, yeah, I brought her in and then I brought in these bad guys who have figured out ways to create sort of genetically a combination of magic and magic and science and all this stuff to try and create superpowered people. Mm-hmm. And I did bring another werewolf into play in this book. So you've got a couple paranormal good guys, but I've left a couple paranormal bad guys it's always nice when the good guys win at the end of a novel, but sometimes not all the bad guys are captured, right? Some kind of are in the wind somewhere. And so there are going to be those elements, and there's going to be obviously he's aware there's other paranormal beings, so he's going to encounter them. But what I didn't want to run into is what I call the Murder, She Wrote conceit. And it's an issue that also happens in the Marvel universe as well, is I didn't want to have a bazillion paranormal beings running around New York City. I wanted it to be normal New York City. And it's set in the past, so it's set in 2017. And it's set in a reality where everything is real. Like even the restaurants, I had to make sure the restaurants they ate in were actually, not under construction and open when the movie was taking place. Right. When the book was taking place. And I didn't want to have a whole paranormal bad guy novel in LA. I needed him to go somewhere else, because like with Murder, She Wrote, is like this really small village. there's going to be a murder every week. Like the murder rate per capita. Summer murders. Been, yeah. So I didn't want to do that. So I wanted to spread it out a little bit more. But yeah, I do have now where you're like, well, okay, there's a lot more paranormal things going on than meets the eye. I guess we haven't been paying attention, but now that he's aware of them, he's going to start to see more and maybe put things together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, with the whole urban fantasy thing, you have so much that's recorded that is quote unquote real. When we were doing Secret Stairs, I kind of got into it a little bit, and you've got ghost stories and you've got strange creatures roaming around. So you've got this big area that you could put them in and not overdo it, like you said, but drop in a thing here and a thing there. And it can be so diverse because urban fantasy has this big umbrella it covers.
Yeah, yeah. I look forward to playing more there too. And it's an act of discovery with every new sort of kind of creature that I'm going to introduce.
Yeah.
So the fourth book is the last book of this series, but there will be more expanded characters. Okay.
Yeah, there's going to be more. So this was just, I mean, there is a story arc that completes here, but there's so many unanswered questions and so many other things going on. There's even characters that have been recurring characters that you're still not sure. What's their real story?
Right.
His friend Buddy, who just keeps showing up at just the right time all throughout Michael's life and saves his butt. So what's his deal? Why? How is he doing this? What is he really? I don't know. Yeah, I'll find that out when I write a future book, I guess.
It's dinner time.
Okay, so I want to talk about these two ladies.
Of course.
And our main character.
Yeah. That you thought might be the menage a trois.
Yes. There were some potential doors open there.
Possibly.
So my first question is, what do they see in him?
Okay. Very, very, very good question. I think so. One of the things that they see in him is Michael's very attentive and actually focuses and is listens. He has really good hearing, unlike most men, right? So he just sets himself apart immediately. Yeah. Right. All joking aside, though, he's also, and I did purposely set him as, and I'm using an Eddie Stereo, as Michael is a beta human, but an alpha wolf, meaning that he will always put the other person first. He is not a dominant whatever. He is sort of like the soft-spoken, caring human individual. And so on the flip side, he happens to be a really strong, tough wolf, but that's not his human personality. And so they see all of this compassion in him and this ability to, you know, connect with them on a more meaningful level. Obviously, the other thing too is he can't help but accidentally manipulate people because of his enhanced senses. He can, and it just becomes a habit for him. And that's something he doesn't like about himself, is he doesn't want to have this power over people, but he does have that. So so he happens to, you know, Gail was a love from his past, and he still loves her, but it's sort of evolved into a friendship. And then he has Lex, and then he's kind of caught between loving these two different women and being in conflict with that. So that I wanted to put him in that situation and have him struggle for a bit.
I had a sense, perhaps you as the writer is very in love with all three of those characters, but that you have a real love for Lex. Are you in love with Lex?
Yeah, I think so. I'm in love with Lex. But here's the funny thing is I still, I'm Gail. I created Gail through Michael's eyes as a figure for him to worship, and he does worship her in many, many ways. And I'm working on I'm co-authoring the next book in the series called Lover's Moon, which is the backstory of how Gail and Michael first met and fell in love. So it's going to be a romance, and I'm co-authoring it with a friend of mine who writes romance reasons, you know, urban fantasy, whatever. And not good romance the way a good romance writer writes romance. I can write about love, sure, but I couldn't write Gail's character because I worshipped her so much, like Michael, just like Michael worships Lex and Gail.
Okay.
I couldn't write her flaws properly, and Julie could. So I needed Julie to write Gail's point of view because I can't see the world through her eyes. I can only see it through Michael's, apparently. Interesting. And so that's going to be an interesting, it's going to be an interesting project. We've just started working on it.
You know, we've had some authors on that have written first person from the female point of view. Well, Cherry Shepherd is one.
Yeah.
They've done a remarkable job. I have found that in my own work, it's hard for me to see the female side. It really is. I mean, Butters, the hunter has an affair at the start of the book. And one comment I got in the reviews was, does he really have to have sex? Does he really need to have sex? And so my one word, you know, my two words comment back then was, don't you?
I thought it was something about keeping the species going. Right.
Well, no, at this point, he's like 64 years old.
Oh, you know? Okay.
But the chick is young, so.
I have a quick question with the characters, because it's a conflict that I ran into, and I always like to find out from authors who do this, did they have the same conflict? You have a character that you kill off. We're not going to name names. Did you struggle leading up to it to the decision somebody carry, or was it just there's, you know, you had to fight yourself to do it?
You know, that's a really great question, Richard, and I've run into this on more than one novel. I often start off with the idea, oh, okay, I'm going to have this character die because it works really wonderfully for my plot. And then I go to write it, and I am torn, and I am beside myself, and I'm struggling, and I'm crying, and I'm upset, and I'm like, well, maybe I can figure out a way that this character doesn't die. And that somehow tells me that I did it right. That mm-hmm. if I got to the point where I have to, now I have to pull the trigger, or now I have to pull the lever, or whatever it is, and I go, oh my Lord, wow, this is real now. That's, I do struggle with that. And that happens with characters, not just a character that I have to that and dying, because they walk on and are meant to be bit characters. They suddenly take on a life of their own.
Right.
I found that so many times, and that's such a wonderful experience. So I go, oh, I can't wait to see what they say now.
Do you think as you're writing and you're in a series and a character has started with the first book and you've carried him through three or four books now, Do you find eventually in the storyline that you've got going that has outlived his usefulness, that the storyline and the characters beyond him have gone past him now and it's time to maybe kill him off?
Yeah, that may come into play. In this particular case, this series, I mean, Michael is the Canadian werewolf that the series is about. So chances are he's probably going to be around for a while longer. However, as things evolve, and this happened, Michael Connelly has done this recently, right? As Harry Bosch is retiring and getting old, he died. And I love the way Connelly has done that in such a respectful way, but he's like, listen, dude can't keep doing this, right? He's got cancer. Right. Like, I'm not spoiling anything for anyone who's read the Harry Bosch novels.
Oh, all of them.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I love the way Michael Connelly did that. So if it comes time for that to happen to Michael, it has to be because someone's ready to take over in that role.
Right. 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 Well, I killed one off and just heard nothing but grief.
So yeah. Because that's the other thing, right? And then did she lock you up in a cabin and then she hobbled you and she forced you to rewrite the people where misery didn't die?
I actually started with my sister-in-law.
Okay.
What'd you kill him off for? I really liked him. Because it was time.
And then you've written other characters we are so happy to see you kill off.
Oh, yeah.
They had it coming. Could you have done it 10 pages earlier?
I have some pretty good bad guys. Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's go talk radio. This is the Writer's Block. And we'll be right back after this brief word from Tuscany Bay Books. I was sitting in my private office looking out my private window, dropping private eye drops in my private eye, when a tall blonde walked by. And now you ask me how I know she was tall. My office is on the second floor. And then there was a knock on the door, so I jumped out of my chair. I tripped over the couch. I unlatched the latch, and there stand a beautiful blonde holding a manuscript, and I said, hi. She said, hi. What can I do for you? I said, well, she said, I have a manuscript, and I want my book published. And I said, well, you've come to the right place. This is Tuscany Bay Books, and that's exactly what we do. Why don't you come in, and we'll have a drink on it. But all I have is a bottle of ink. So we drank that and stood around feeling mighty blue. But you don't have to feel mighty blue, because at Tuscany Bay, we format your book to a cover that will make your head spin and make you so proud of the work that you've done. Tuscany Bay Books, you can't go wrong, and you can find us on the web at www.tuscanybaybooks.com. And if you see a blonde walk by holding a manuscript and a bottle of blue ink, just say hi.
That's it. I am not taking any more 2-week breaks. I go away for 2 weeks and strange stuff starts popping up. All right. That's it. I swear to the audience.
Well, it's your turn next. Okay.
I could see Leslie Nielsen doing that bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we'd have to dig him up, but yeah, we could probably do that. It's now 6:31, and we're in the studio with Mark Leslie. And, of course, Bobby Jean Bell and Richard Paulinelli and myself. And we're talking to our guest, Mr. Mark Leslie. And if you want to call and talk to Mark, the number here is 323. I knew I was going to eventually do it. 323-203-0815. Let's talk about some of your other writing, Mark, because I know you've been writing for a very long time. And you've written just a conglomerate of stuff. I mean, how to's all the way to, I mean, your story about Peter, and now we're back into werewolf tales. I mean, how do you keep your brain straight on all of this? And kind of your answer, I kind of want you to talk to the new writers out there, because, you know, they're kind of wondering how they keep their brain straight too.
You assume I keep my brain straight for one.
No, when you're writing, not always. I saw your Satanic Bible.
So I think we have, as writers, as creative people, in general, people are very creative, actually do two things. The key is to actually first figure out which of the 1,000 ideas that come to you, or which of the dozen ideas that are relatively decent, which are the ones that you're going to invest time and energy in. And they should be something you're passionate about, because it's going to be a lot of work. It's not easy, right? So the key is sort of getting rid of the noise, picking one or two things that you think you can do, and actually butt in chair, fingers on keyboard, getting it done. And then the second key to that is finishing, because you have to actually get to a point where you actually have something that can be edited, that can be refined, that can be sent to a publisher, that can be whatever, however you want to deal with that, sent to an agent. Or you're going to hire someone to edit it for you and publish it. That's kind of one of the challenges. One of the problems I have, I've described this stove with all of these elements, and I have so many things on the back burner. There are projects, right? For example, I've got this Canadian Mounted. Are you guys familiar with the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles movie, the John?
Oh yeah.
Right. So there's a book that John Candy's holding up in the airport scene when we're at LaGuardia at the beginning of the movie.
And it's called, remember.
I'm going to show it to you.
Uh-oh. Okay.
It's got a scantily clad woman on the cover, and it's called The Canadian Mounted. Now, this was obviously a prop book. And John Candy is kind of like reading it, looking at Steve Martin over the book. And it's obviously just the prop people having a fun time with a joke that he's a Canadian actor and he's reading what we used to call a one-hander. Back in the book industry days, right? It was an erotic novel.
Right.
And what I was always fascinated by that, because I'm a book. And then in Deadpool 2, if you pay attention, there's a scene, Ryan Reynolds, Canadian actor, huge fan of John Candy. There's a scene where he's going, oh, I'm going to be in the bathroom. And he has a copy of The Canadian Mounted in his hand, a prop book they designed specifically as a nod to John Candy in that movie. So I thought, and this is up for pre-order now, I'm working on The Canadian Mounted. And it was supposed to be a collection of stories by Canadians. They were all going to be called The Canadian Mounted, but they couldn't be erotica. Just had to have that title. And then I was going to have a chapter at the end, which was going to be trivia and why I did this book and why it's based on Planes, Trains. And when I started doing the research for the trivia, I realized I had a full book of trivia about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. And this year is the 35th anniversary of that movie coming out. One of my favorite movies of all time. So that's one of those projects that was on the back burner for 5 years. I finally had the trigger and said, no, I've just got to make this book happen. And ironically, I looked at the calendar and went, yeah, it's the 35th anniversary of the movie. Let's do this. But I've had books on back burners for years. So A Canadian Werewolf in New York was started as a NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month project, back in 2006. I didn't finish it until 2014. And then it got published in 2016 after going through edits and stuff like that. So it was like 10 years before that book actually came to see light of day. And I didn't know it was going to be a series until after it was published. And then I started to get readers saying, well, what happens if this, what about this? I'd like, what does Michael do next? So I think you have to be open to the possibility. But then you also have to be open to throwing out some of those darlings so you can focus on the handful of things that maybe actually will be worthwhile and maybe back for 10 years.
Do you find yourself busy with other people's projects and to the point where you're leaving yours on the back burner?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I have really talented writer friends. I do help a lot of them, and I do also consult and help a lot of writers. And I do spend quite a bit of my time helping other people, but I get satisfaction from that. And that's okay because I still can do my passion. And I think I learn every time I help someone else too. So I'm benefiting from helping them too. So that's actually been a good experience for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Richard and I are right now, we're so bowled down with new authors and manuscripts, and they're coming in almost like every day now. We're getting writers wanting to fresh into their books, that it leaves us no time.
And that's a challenge. Again, you got into this because you had a passion for story, and you don't want to shortchange yourself while you're helping people, right?
Exactly. But we've also been doing this show for 7 years, so almost 7 years.
Wow.
And when we do this weekly, and we read a book weekly, and so that takes up early morning hours. You know, it's like I'm up at 2:30 reading your book this morning, and last couple of days, and. So it's like, wow, of course, my dog woke me up this morning because she busted out of her crate and climbed up on my bed with me at 1:30.
And you thought it was a wolf?
No, I knew it was a dog.
You thought Michael was getting amorous with you?
Well, he gets amorous with everyone else. So, but publishing gig, and you get so many irons in the fire. I mean, how do you look so good?
Yeah. You know, I only need about five hours of sleep a night. That helps. That gives me a good 19 hours a day.
Yeah, I'm really lucky if I get that.
Yeah. So, honestly, if I get, I think I got 6.5 hours the other night, and I was like, oh, man, I'm really refreshed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I find I have to take a nap now. Of course, I'm old, so I get to take a nap, and nobody can say anything.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I know. Let's talk briefly before we have to go to our next break. I might as well go ahead and do the last break while we're thinking about it. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block, and we'll be right back with you right after this brief message from Creative Edge Publicity. Okay, you've written a book. How are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Publicity, they want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up, so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, in radio, podcast, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. So why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com. Creative Edge. It's your work, and it's your brand. Why would you trust it to anyone else? Creative Edge Publicity. And we are back. It is now 6:41, and we're back with our guest, Mr. Mark Leslie. The question I was going to have, Mark, before I got so rudely interrupted with Creative Edge, is when you're covered is because I saw something today that was that it didn't irritate me, but it made me wonder how many covers come out like that. Is that and the caption was obviously someone who designed a cover who hadn't read the book, and it was something totally different than that. I mean, we all knew the title of the book, but it was like a totally different cover. It was like, wow, that's way off. Do you find do you make your people who design your covers, unless you do it yourself, read the book?
No, I don't think they need to read the book. As a matter of fact, I think one of the mistakes authors make is they try to capture a scene from the book rather than capture the essence of what the book is about.
Exactly.
And that can be a mistake. I've used different cover designers. Initially, the first cover for A Canadian Werewolf in New York was a decent cover, but it was not to the target audience. It was not an urban fantasy cover. It wasn't until I republished it back in 2020 when I hired Juan Padron, who is a cover designer, and I basically sent him some notes of what it's about, and I told him a bit of the feel, and he came up with the really great textured logo. And I know it's a subtle thing, so you see it in Fright Night's Big City, but you see it in every one of the covers because he does the whole series now. Is there's a texture of a bunch of maple leaves, very Canadian, in the backdrop of some of the text in the main title. There's the Canadian flag, the backdrop of the Canadian flag on every single cover that's consistent, which comes from the first novel, which was New York City skyline with the moon and the Canadian flag and the different wolves. And what I love about what Juan has done with this is he's really brought it into the genre it should be. So I told him a little bit about what it's about, just high-level summary. Here are some books I like. Here's the genre. And obviously, he knows the genre. He knows what's out in the world. And then he comes up with some ideas. And usually, we kick back and forth. We've kicked back and forth a few ideas. And I'm like, and one of them was he had a werewolf in the traditional sense of a humanoid standing up, you know, looking scary, like, you know, like some of the Wolfman movies. And that's when I was like, okay, he hadn't read it. So that's when I said, no, this guy turns into a gray wolf like this. So then he's like, oh, okay, cool. And then he brought back what ended up being the Canadian Werewolf cover. So, but that's really important. And I like that he captures the essence of it. I usually tell him a little bit about the mood. Now, obviously, there's no amorous activity on the cover of this universe. I think that's really, really important. And the same thing, even if you have a marketing person wanting to market the book for you, you can't expect that they're going to read, even if you're working with a big publisher, the person doing your publicity and marketing, they're not going to read every single book that's being published, but they're going to just kind of understand who's it for.
Right.
You know, who does it speak to, et cetera.
Right. But I think that this one person was making the comment was that this person didn't even have any idea what this book was about. You know, they went by the title. Right.
Yeah, and I've seen publishers
that's a big
make
mistake.
That mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, even for friends of mine where you're like, oh my God, this is so off. this is not. Yeah. Yeah. That happens a lot, unfortunately, across
the industry. Yeah. And Richard designs the covers for our books.
Okay.
Does a phenomenal job. If you take a minute, if you can, for Declan Finn's new books, or James Webb, who did Tom's Revenge.
Yeah.
That cover was done by the author of the book. He drew that cover, and it turned out just wonderful.
Yeah.
The beautiful, beautiful cover.
Yeah, thing I do with our authors is, obviously I've read the book. So yeah. I'll come up with an initial design. I'll send it to them. I said, okay, what do you think? And they'll give me feedback. And we go from there back and forth until we dial it in.
Right.
And so far that process works.
Yeah.
And I remember my first book cover. It was like, here it is, deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, okay, I guess if that's how it works in publishing. But I think if you do that, as a cover designer, and but you know, it's the small little details, I think, are the ones where you nail it, where you, you dial that cover in. And it's just, you got to have that back and forth between the author and the designer.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, my wife, who's also the publisher, producer of the Writer's Block, Jerry, did the cover design for Jefferson's Chance. And I said, you know, I really, this cover has to say what this book is about without saying what this book is about.
Right.
So she said, well, why don't we put the artificial leg on there and a Texas Ranger badge? Now, that tells you the whole story. It's a guy who's got an artificial leg and is a Texas Ranger. Bingo. And it turned out to be one of the best covers I've ever had. And it really helped sell the book. Because, you know, people go, oh, wow, that's cool. That's a very cool cover. You know, but cover design to me is tantamount. And new writers, unfortunately, don't get that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they really understand that phenomena of having a great cover.
Yeah, what it can actually do, because it speaks to the genre, it speaks to the experience that the reader is about to have or not have.
And it's the verbiage on the back cover, because that's the first thing everybody does is turn the book over.
Yeah. it's sales copy. It's not a blow by blow of what happens in the
There
book.
You go. There you go.
Yeah. Your job, that text's job is to get them to buy the book.
Well, I was going to ask you the question, but I think we asked you before about writer's block. Remind me what your answer was. I listened to your last show, but I forgot already because I'm old and I
don't remember either. So we're all
So you can tell us again. Have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you get through it?
Well, I don't believe in you. Basically, a surgeon doesn't say, I have a surgery block. Right. So it's kind of like, if your job is a writer and you're serious about this, you'll make it happen. So what I often do is writer's block is I trick myself is maybe I'm blocked on this scene. So I jump to a different scene. That's maybe I'm blocked on this project because I have so many projects on the go. I jump to a different project or maybe I need to take a break and go walk with the character or do something different. And that's usually when it clicks. And I can come back to it. So there are ways around writer's block. You just have to navigate that. And remember, you're in control. You can move that thing around. Maybe the block's still there, but you can still navigate around.
Yeah, you can go around it. Yeah.
The other side.
Yeah, that's what I'll do. I'll sit and write a totally different scene and put it aside. And then when it comes time I just cut and paste it and put it in the book. So
yeah, exactly. Because you've done something else, right?
Right. Yeah. We're out of time.
It always passes so quickly when we chat.
Well, it does, you know, but, you know, hey, it's what it is. So we want to thank you for joining us tonight. Again, it's been a wonderful experience. And your next book, get a hold of the bookie or tell Mickey to get you back on the show.
Definitely.
And
thank you.
We certainly welcome you back on. Now we are booked up through, you know, August, I think, August or September. So anyway, thanks again. I know it's late out there, so.
Thank
go have
you,
another Charlie. IPA and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you, Bobby. You're going to go downstairs and have a drink at the Algonquin at the bar down there.
To the Blue Bar, yes.
That's right.
I think we'll head right down there.
Yeah. Excellent.
There you go. So thank you again for joining us. You can hang out if you want for a few minutes after we go off the air next week. We have a writer, Otto. His new gathering. What that's about, and we'll find out next week. But for right now, and for Richard and Bobby Jean and myself, Sam Hassan, who's the owner and our engineer, and of course the bookie without whom this show would not be possible, we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.